Do you feel like you're thriving? According to a Gallup poll taken a few years ago, only about half of people in the U.S. said that they were thriving. But what does that even mean? What's the difference between thriving and being happy? And what are some things you can do to help yourself thrive? Donna Stoneham is the author of The Thriver's Edge, and she's here to answer some of those questions. A Northern California transplant with deep Texas roots, Donna has worked for the last 25 years as an executive coach, transformational leadership consultant, and educator. The Thriver's Edge was featured in BuzzFeed's 9 Awesome Books for Your Kick-Ass Career. So, Donna, it's great to have you here.
Great to be with you, Kate.
Well, first of all, when we say only about half of people in the U.S. and 24% of adults worldwide say they're thriving, what does that mean?
So thriving in the Gallup context is really about well-being. So it's how people feel about the quality of their lives and whether they feel like they're surviving or they're thriving or just barely getting by. So for me, thriving is about can we really be in full blossom regardless of the season of our lives, regardless of what we're going through.
Assuming that we have options and that, you know, that it's somewhat in our power, you talk about some tools that people can use. You start off by talking about something called the Jonah Principle. What is that?
Okay. So the Jonah Complex was one of Abraham Maslow's theories. And in that theory, he said that we are as afraid to succeed as we are to fail. And that's one of the things that holds people back from accomplishing what they want to do in their lives or taking the step they want to take towards fulfilling a particular dream they might have. And he says there's several different reasons why we do that. And one is that we might be afraid of being rejected. We're afraid if we really do take that big leap that people will not like us or, you know, our friends would turn away from us. He's afraid. He also mentioned that oftentimes people might feel a sense of overwhelm, like it's just too much. How am I going to pull this off? Or possibly a sense of too much responsibility. Like I already have this much on my plate right now. How could I possibly consider taking on something else? And another fear he talked about was narcissism. So the fear that people would think that if we actually do, you know, get a book out in the world or if we actually do fulfill a dream that might be threatening to somebody else, that that would make people think that we're narcissistic or we're trying to toot our own horn or and some of those things hold us back.
Yeah, and I think for women especially mm-hmm. that fear that people will think that we're you used the phrase too big for our britches. I thought that was funny because I certainly heard that growing up. How do you get around that?
So a lot of it, I think, is being able to feel a sense of comfort within yourself and also surrounding yourself with what I call in my book are not just the inner champion or that voice within us that really is sort of our guardian angel looking out for us and wanting us to be able to fulfill our potential, but also the people in our lives who really do support us no matter what. The people you don't have to worry about that if you achieve something that you've been looking forward to for your whole life, that they're going to be there for you no matter what. So I think it's surrounding ourselves with those kind of people as well as being able to what I call tame our own inner critic.
What are some tools for doing that?
One of the things I think is to almost imagine that you have a friend, you have an essential part of yourself that was never injured, never hurt, never damaged, that it always accompanies you. And developing the same kind of relationship with that part of yourself that you might have as a child developed with the inner critic. And the inner critic is what helped keep us safe when we were little. It was that voice. Usually it's often parental. And so we internalize that voice. And when we can learn how to sort of turn the volume down on that, I think it's helpful. I actually named my inner critic. So it's like I have this internal conversation when she pipes up and I say, thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate you're trying to help. And I'd really appreciate it now if you would just leave me alone because I need to do this. Right. So it's learning how to balance both that positive internal voice and that negative internal voice. And unfortunately, a lot of us never really connect with that positive internal voice because we're so used to kind of beating ourselves up. There's an author by the name of Rick Hansen, and he wrote a book called Buddha's Brain. And he talks in there about the whole neurobiology research that's out and that our brains are like Teflon for positivity and Velcro for negativity. So we hang on to what's negative, right? And we don't even think about what's positive. So one thing I tell people to do a lot is I say, write down a list of all the great things that you've accomplished in your life. And then write down a list of all the things you're not proud of or that people have, you know, criticized you for. And notice the size of the list. Because 9 times out of 10, probably 99 out of 100, your list of what you've done well and what you're proud of and what you've accomplished is far longer than the list of what you've been criticized for.
You mentioned feeling overwhelmed. I think a lot of us feel overwhelmed a lot. And one of the obstacles, actually the first one that you talked about in the book, is trauma. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of trauma that people experience in this society and certainly in many other societies. What can people do? I mean, like, what can you do for yourself, and also what can you do for other people in your life who have experienced a lot of trauma or who are showing signs of trauma?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and very, very relevant right now. In my book, I have the moniker of Thriver. And several of the things that I think are really relevant in the book to how do you deal with things when you're in the midst of really difficult situations. And the first one is trust. And so it's how do you trust yourself, especially when you're in a situation that's really hard and really challenging, and making sure that you surround yourself with people you can trust. Not everyone's trustworthy, that's for sure, but making sure that you're aligning yourself with those people that you do have confidence that you can trust, and even trying to expand what I call your circle of trust so that it becomes larger. People that maybe you think you can trust, you're pretty sure you can. How do you bring those people into the next level, into the circle of people you can count on? So, and it's also, I think, and this is really hard to do sometimes, especially if you've been traumatized, is how can you believe in the goodness of the world and of other people? And that can be a huge stretch, especially when you've been betrayed. But trust and betrayal are like the flip side of the coin. And if you don't learn how to trust, it's really difficult to get through and get over and be able to work with betrayal in a powerful way so that you do own your own power and you are able to claim it. One of the things that I think is really important first is working on your relationship of trust within yourself. It's really hard to trust other people when you don't trust yourself. One thing that's helpful, I think, is to go back through your life and to think about the situations and the times in your life when you really did trust yourself and what happened when you were able to do that. And most of the time, at least my own experience and people I work with, when you really do follow your intuition and you really do trust your inner direction, most of the time you make the right decision and what it is you're trying to do. So it's building up your own capacity for trusting yourself and then making sure that you surround yourself with trustworthy people. So a lot of us, sometimes unconsciously, continue to repeat patterns from our childhoods or from our past of getting in relationships with people that aren't trustworthy. So what I recommend and encourage people to do is, you know, don't wait. If you know, if you've got a red flag going off, trust your gut that might not be the right relationship for you to be in.
So the second key, you have 7 keys and they spell Thriver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the first one is trust and the second one is humility. And you talk about something you call confident humility which I loved that because I think because I always feel like I'm not humble enough. But then I think, well, if it's confident humility, maybe I'm starting to get there. What's confident humility?
So, Kate, it's interesting because I find this a lot with women, too. I think women tend to be much more reluctant to say what they've accomplished. And so when I say confident humility, it's the notion of fully stepping into our power and owning what we know and owning our wisdom and being willing to share that with other people, but to do it in a way that comes from humility and not from chest chest thumping, not from browbeating, not from being like Trump and talking all the time about how great you are at something. A lot of it's the spirit in which what you're sharing is intended. So if you're doing it from a place of caring and wanting to support someone and wanting to get a message out that's going to help someone, that's very different than if you're doing it strictly, you know, self-inflation. And, you know, some of the best leaders I know and have worked with and some of the people I admire most are really able to do that with great power. I mean, I think of like Maya Angelou, right? She's someone I think had confident humility. She stood out there. She said what she wanted to say. She made a huge difference in what she said. You would never accuse her of being a braggart, but you would never think of her as someone who hid in the shadows.
Resilience is the R in Thrive in your book. I feel like that word is kind of overused right now. I mean, it's just everywhere. Everywhere you look, everybody's talking about teaching kids to be resilient and resilient communities. And it certainly has its utility. But what does it mean to you?
So to me, resilience is really about our ability to stay centered in the midst of conflict, to be able to bounce back quickly when we're challenged or feel defeated, and really to be able to take care of ourselves in a way that allow us, as they say from Texas, where I grew up in Texas, you can't get water from an empty well. So we have to be always replenishing our own resources in order to be there for others. So to me, you know, Kate, resilience is really a selfless act more than it's a selfish one. Because when we take care of ourselves, we have a whole lot more to give to others. And when we don't, our well runs dry. The best example of that in my book, I tell a story about Ellen, who was a client and a dear friend. And Ellen was in charge of an organization where I was working. And she literally worked 24/7. She did not take care of herself. She really didn't have a social network of friends around her. Her whole life was dedicated to her work and her career. And I got very worried about her one day. We were having lunch, and I said, "You need to go to a monastery and rest. I'm really worried about you." And she got very angry with me. And that following, for saying, she said, "I'm fine. I don't need any help. I'm doing just fine." And that was on a Friday night. And on Monday, I got a call from her HR manager that she had had a stroke that night in her hot tub and died. And a couple of months later, she came in a dream, and she was riding on a bus. And she said, she's screaming at the bus driver, "Let me off this GD bus." And he said, "Lady, I can't let you off the bus. This is your bus." And she flung the door open and she screamed out to me, "Donna, be careful which bus you get on." And to me, she's my story I use in the chapter on resilience, because at the time I had chronic fatigue syndrome and I was really sick. And I would have gone down the same path she did had I not changed the way I was living. It took me a couple of years to get well. But I always think of her when I overdo, when I'm overstressed, when I'm not taking care of myself. Because, you know, we only have one life. Well, I'm not sure about that, but we have one life right now. And so, you know, what are we going to do to make the best of it?
Donna Stoneham is the author of The Thriver's Edge, 7 Keys to Transform the Way You Live, Love, and Lead. Check it out at donnastoneham.com.